Cherokee.
Cherokee,
from the chamber. And then we have the commission members, if you want to introduce yourselves.
Sure. Do you want us to scoot closer since we don't have... Would that be better for the phone?
Is anyone else actually coming? Or we don't know?
People, I imagine, might be trickling in. But
Carolyn's coming. She's running late.
Okay.
Oh. Well, in that case, my name's Aaliyah Gaskins, and I'm with the Transportation Commission.
I'm Casey Kane, I'm also with the Transportation Commission as the representative for the Traffic and Parking Board.
And Melissa McMahon, Transportation Commission, one of the delegates from the Planning Commission.
Pawnee Slauson from staff, work for Transportation Planning.
And Jen Schlesinger, so I sort of did some introductions at the last meeting, but we have a lot of new faces today. I guess I've also introduced myself to everyone here. But I'm staff for the Transportation Commission and leading this effort, long-range planner with the city. And I think as I go through my presentation, I might talk to you a little bit about my background. I'll be pulling in a lot of stuff that I've done from, or some things that I've done from Massachusetts with my work at the State Department of Transportation there.
Chris Zeman, Division Chief of Transportation Planning.
So yeah, thanks everyone for coming today. I worked with Ali on the agenda for this as chair of the Alexandria Mobility Plan Advisory Committee.
So fancy.
Long
time. Yes, always.
But for, I think Casey, you were the only one who was here last week, so I do have my slides from the first presentation that I did, so I can go back a little bit. But basically, at the last meeting, we talked a little bit about what the mobility plan is and some example mobility plans that we're looking to as we're moving forward with this. And the slides are online, if you haven't already, I encourage you to check those out. But there might be time at the end where I can flip back through, and I'll give a little bit of a recap. Give you an update on where we are, and then just give some food for thought on just trends that we're watching in Alexandria, data that we're looking at that could help influence what we want to do for transportation going forward, and then also looking more around the country of different mobility trends, and sort of starting from the middle of these are some tools that jurisdictions have that have done some interesting things that we may or may not want to look at further. But obviously, they'd have to tie with our goals and our vision and what we want to accomplish. But it just sort of to lay the groundwork as we're moving forward with this plan. So I did a little tweak of the slide I presented last time, but I'm trying to be clear about what we're trying to do with this mobility plan. And we're really trying to make it a more policy and strategy document than a concrete list of projects. So keep it more at this, what are we trying to achieve and what are some initiatives that can help us get there? And it's a strategic update to the 2008 plan. Marie, as you saw, it has solid bones there, but we really want to update it based off of context changes and technology changes that weren't well accounted for, and also given all the progress that we've made. And we want to incorporate all of these disparate efforts, or not disparate, but follow-on efforts, and incorporate them into this one comprehensive planning document. Just a reminder, if you're not familiar, we have this phased approach where we're really focusing on streets and transportation demand management is, I think, the bulk of the effort for this phase, incorporating the recent bike and ped, and then also really starting to think about smart mobility, but knowing that we're going to really write that chapter more in the second phase. And so we have transit and curbside parking and curbside management coming next year.
Let me ask a question. So on the previous slide, which you don't have to go back to, you talked about sort of trying to look at this document as being less specific on project details. In the case of the pedestrian bike one, it actually has some pretty specific detail on that. So is the thought that you would just leave that there for now until the next update, or would part of this be to sort of think about taking those out and tracking them separately just to kind of maintain the consistency of what you're looking for going forward?
That's a good point, and that came up a little bit in our discussions about where we wanted to go with this plan. I think it's, yeah, the main update for the bike and ped is to incorporate it into the format that we ultimately decide on for this plan, so I can see the projects living separately. But I think that still remains to be seen, and it's a good question to ask right now.
Well, if they do go separate, which I'm not opposed to, but we just need to make sure that we've got a good mechanism to maintain the tracking of those.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of this is thinking a little bit more about the long-range plan update process that the Transportation Commission does to prioritize all of the the big projects that are out there in the sphere. So I think these two efforts could dovetail nicely, and we obviously need to speak to how that happens a little bit better.
Yeah. One of the things when we were kind of talking about the agenda that we were saying, it's like eventually we need to get to a point where we're starting to really think intentionally about the overlap between the long-range process, other plans people are creating, and like if this is a policy and guiding document, how do we ensure other people are aware of this and using that overlay? As something to think about in each of the chapters.
So exciting news. We have issued a notice of intent to award the consultant for this project to Kimberly Horn, and they have Tool and Neonet Strategies as their sub-consultant. And Debbie, I'm not good with folks on the phone. Did you see the PowerPoint that I sent you?
I absolutely am.
Okay, great.
I'm on page 34.
Okay, perfect. Let me know if you need me to say where we are.
No, I think I'm following. Okay.
Great. Contract not yet signed, but we're very close. I think it's hopefully just a week or so away at this point. So again, these last two presentations have been more laying the groundwork, but once they're on board, we'll be able to really move full speed ahead and come back to the this committee with, I think, some more meat to grab onto once they do a lot of the preliminary work. Kimberly Horn, if you're not familiar, they've done a lot of work in this this area. They are involved with the Alexandria Transit Vision Study. Sorry, everything's really small on the screen. But she's very familiar with Aaron in particular with outreach and a lot of the issues particular to this community. So we're really excited to have them on board almost. So the next slides, again, we'll be going through some of the high-level trend data. And due to some data issues, we can't go back as far as we would like to get. I was working with our statistician, and she didn't like comparing old ACS data with more recent ACS data. But I have a little snapshot of, I think, some of the bigger indicators of, or bigger demographic characteristics that influence transportation. Just give you an understanding of what things look like today, learn what's changed a little bit since the last plan, and then can engage with you guys on what you think this means for the mobility plan, or if there's other things you want us to be looking at in terms of this kind of data. But just baseline information is the city has grown, I think it's 8% since 2010, so that's about a percentage a year. But regional projections that was population, household growth, increasing by about 50% by 2045, so for the next 25-30 years, depending on how you count. So that's obviously a big thing that we'll have to be paying attention to going forward. And then same on the employment side, and this was pre-Amazon too, so just lots of growth that'll be a part of this plan. Or thinking over the horizon of this plan. And then household size, this is showing the 5-year or 2012 to 2017 using ACS data, and it's showing just in that short period of time a 4% larger household size, which I thought was interesting. And you have to dig a little deeper to understand what exactly is going on here, but potentially families are maybe staying here a little bit longer. Maybe you have more roommate situations. It's a little hard to tell, but larger household sizes tend to impact the type of travel that happens in a that can be happening here, particularly if you're talking about families versus one or two person households. So we have an age characteristics chart, and obviously there's not a huge difference. This is again comparing 2012 to 2017, but you are seeing a slightly higher median age, and slightly larger older population there. And I do see again it's small, but a slight uptick in older children. So that's another thing to could be interesting to pay attention to. And then income. Income's another major input into the regional travel demand model. We have a high median income here, but we also have 25% of the population earning less than $60,000 a year. So another thing to be mindful of as we're thinking about the region and who lives here. Commute times, as they are nationally, are going up. So 6% just since between 2012 and 2017. That's not insignificant. And then car ownership, you can see not much has changed. I think this is partly snapshot, partly just to see small changes. But you actually see if you compare 2012 to 2017, a very slight drop in zero vehicle households. I think that might be significant at a very minor level, but we do see that I think 90%, I think is it, sorry, I had some written stats before, but lots of one and two car households, basically. And if you compare it to the U.S., we have a lot fewer 3, 4, and 5 car households, which is good, but...
Yeah, this is consistent. Arlington County is similar, where they've got 91-ish% of households have at least one car.
Yeah.
Compared to D.C., which has, I think, 40%-ish zero-vehicle households.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people, thinking about how the region works, wonder why some things happen in D.C. that don't happen just outside D.C. But
right.
Historically, our land use regulations have really supported vehicle ownership more. And it's been easier to have a place where you can park one at a reasonably affordable rate,
right.
Whether it's Arlington or Alexandria or Falls Church, et cetera. So, yeah.
And I do think, I had another chart here earlier that was comparing this to the U.S. and I was trying to go into the region, but we do have a lot more one-car households than but a lot fewer zero-car households than the region.
Can you clarify household here? So if I have 4 roommates, are we still a household if we're living under one roof?
Yes.
Okay.
Wow. Means of commute to work hasn't changed dramatically again over this time period. One thing that I thought was important here is we talk about the rise of working at home, and that in this time period hasn't really changed much according to this data. So digging deeper, and I meant to look this up, I apologize, but maybe you know about how this question is asked, but I'm not sure if it captures 1 or 2 day a week working from home.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
I believe it's typical.
Yeah.
It's like your typical commute. There are other regional data sources that ask how you make your trips, like how many trips per week by what modes, so that you can actually disaggregate an individual person's commute behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And what that tends to result in is a little less drive-alone commuting and a little more everything else. It doesn't necessarily flip the whole switch. You still have more drive-alone commuting in Alexandria as a whole, but you might see it more of those other trips being represented in those other types of data sets that do more of a travel diary style.
Yeah, and I do want to mention we are working on, I should have a report as of yesterday or a month ago, where we did try to do a travel survey of our residents. So that data we'll be able to incorporate into this work.
For services like Uber and Lyft, do they fall in carpool or taxis?
They're a problem with this data. I think they fall under taxis from what I recall, but I know that they're not captured well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think census defines them, so, I mean, these data, I'm not sure how exactly it works, but there are only more recent surveys that have actually called it out.
May I ask, what communities are we surveying? Are we actually going to companies like Lyft and Uber and cab companies, or are we surveying the general public?
So this city staff are doing, we're doing phone calls, surveying the general population to try to understand their travel behavior. It is really, really hard to get any data from Uber and Lyft.
Okay, and that list of phone numbers, how are they selected?
I'm sorry?
Do you know how those numbers are being selected, how random they are? Are we calling people in Old Town, or are we calling people in Arlandria, Weston? What's their distribution?
Yeah, the initial intention was to get a certain target representative population by zip code. We need to see that they were having a lot of issues with the data set, so there's a lot of delays, but we need to double check how much we can drill down into those numbers. But we had a target threshold for each zip code, I think that was the breakdown.
Okay.
But we'll,
I'm always interested in that, having been a statistics minor. I'm always concerned about the sample. If you allow people to self-select, then you're going to miss large groups of population.
Yeah, no, that's what we were trying to avoid.
Right.
So I have a question about the data. So I know that.
So actually, is this about the survey that we're doing?
It's about data in general. So I know that Carlisle produces an annual survey that they provide to the city commuting. Survey, has that been used at all in any of what you're looking at?
I
recognize it's just a consolidated place, but I just wonder what that data that they're providing to the city is being used for.
I think that's more for the TDM, for Thomas's group, and kind of their.
But wouldn't that provide you that same picture here?
It could accept. I mean, this is from national data, and so it's very standardized across cities and everything.
Okay.
Yeah, this is just a sort of a simple snapshot of some of the data that we have. But I'll be working more with folks, and I've had a bunch of different data sets and chose to use this one. So next, I wanted to just provide some food for thought on general mobility trends, what's happening in the world of transportation. You all might be very aware of a lot of these things, but I wanted to start the discussion on sort of what areas interest you, what are some innovative things that you think we should be looking at this initial phase, but a lot of these we'll dig into a lot deeper when we get into the chapter-specific content. So these are sort of quickly what I'll be going through. Partnerships with transportation network companies is the first one here, and this is actually something that the Alexandria Transit Vision Study is exploring, but there might be other avenues where this could be more relevant in this plan, and we'd obviously work with them as they move forward with their effort. But a lot of jurisdictions around the country are working with Uber and Lyft in a variety of different ways. So you have these private entities in the just landing in different cities, much like scooters are doing now. And there's opportunities for the public sector to get involved and to create partnerships to help address shared goals. So there's the Dial a Ride service, which is, I think, something that the Transit Vision Study is looking into to help expand mobility options and better serve first, last mile, or, sorry, that's more to just provide more transportation options in the region. You have first, last mile to connect, to partner with cities to connect, cities partner with Uber and Lyft to connect folks to transit and provide this first, last mile connections at a discount or even free in some places. In Boston, where I worked, we partnered, and this has happened in a lot of different places, partnering with Uber and Lyft for paratransit services. Paratransit's very expensive to provide, and that's one way to reduce costs and also provide usually better service. So just a sample of different ways that communities are working with these providers. And then you can interrupt me if you want, or we can have a discussion at the end. But autonomous vehicles are a big topic that's coming up in when you talk about long-range planning and how to think about them. And I think this is an example in Maryland. There's a Reston. They're looking at coming into a developer. A developer is working with them to provide a shuttle service through the development. But I think one things that this plan will want to look at is what is the role of the city with autonomous vehicles, and I think a lot of it being consistent with our principles from the 2008 plan is really how do we use autonomous vehicles to achieve a more sustainable outcomes, and that would largely have to do with reducing car ownership. And maybe thinking about them through a transit lens, if they can help, provide. This is your slide before, but if you want, sure.
Yeah. Okay. So So this is kind of my thoughts on how autonomous vehicles and kind of relate to sustainability. I mean, the whole idea is that. With autonomous vehicles, if they're shared, then car ownership is lower. So as long as that's true, then that would promote the kind of car-free or car-light land uses. But in order to be sustainable, there need to be fewer total vehicle trips. So if you take 10 car trips a day and you move somewhere with a very good land use, but you're still taking 10 car trips a day, or every trip that you would have taken by a car, you're still taking with a car, but just with an autonomous vehicle, that doesn't do much to promote sustainability. Whereas if, some of them could be substituted by walking or biking, and then when you need to use a vehicle, use an autonomous vehicle.
But doesn't that same issue apply to the Lyft and the Uber? Because doesn't the same issue about the fewer trips apply to the Lyft and Uber. So just because I don't own a car, but I use Uber 10 times a day, the cars are still out on the road, and they're circling and looping and creating problems. So I just think these questions should also be, part of the look at the Uber and Lyft. So there are great opportunities with them, but to me, I just see it as almost a damnation at this point because of the quantity and what they're really doing to many.
It's many really places. The same model with a driver and without a driver.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think your instinct's right in that, we don't have AV today, but we do have Uber and Lyft in those companies. And I think that's our opportunity. If we can get those services to the point of your slide about how there are ways to maybe achieve paratransit outcomes and other kinds of outcomes using those services, it's our job from the policy perspective to set the goals and the standards. And if we can then hold services and investment accountable to those goals and standards, we shape their possible impacts on the community. In some communities, Uber and Lyft and those kinds of services are incentivized to get more people into their pooling options because there are fee structures that are differential and taxes that are differential depending on how those trips are being made. Here, I don't think it's really gotten to that point, so there are pooling options that are not very well used, and most of those pool trips are single riders still. But they have the potential to be shared trips. We just have to figure out how to move it that way.
There is another issue to consider. The handicap population are people in wheelchairs, mm-hmm. people with vision problems, and we have to concern ourselves with accessibility. We also have seniors who will need more accessible transportation as they give up their cars and give up their licenses.
Yep, exactly.
And those are also areas that have to be part of the plan. I think that's part of the reason and my commission is represented here.
Mm-hmm. And that has been, I think you're spot on, and that has been one of the claims of an opportunity with autonomous vehicle technology is liberating seniors who can't drive themselves anymore, but who have potentially the ability to afford access to those services. But that, I think, afford is one key caveat, because not every senior on a fixed income doesn't necessarily want to pay a per trip per mile charge, and that might become prohibitively expensive for them. And to your point, not every senior has the same accessibility needs, and the current Uber and Lyft services out there don't do anything in particular to be more accessible.
Yeah. One of the potentials with autonomous vehicles or like buses, for example, is that instead of having a driver, you could have a customer service representative who could help the disabled populations instead of driving the bus.
Right, like there could still be someone on the bus, but they're helping people get on the bus, and they're talking to the customers and doing a totally different... Mm-hmm. It's like we have to repurpose the job and give the kind of lame job of driving the vehicle to a computer and give the much more interesting and necessary job of serving the people getting on the bus to a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This may be a kind of naive question, but I know that there are cities like Pittsburgh and out in California where there are actually autonomous vehicles on the roads already, like being tested. Mm-hmm. Like, how soon is that expected in other areas? Like, what's the timeline for what we're talking about for when these could actually... come on the scene?
Well, I think there is one that's rolling out on the joint base, Fort Myer Henderson Hall in Arlington. It's just going to be on the base, and it'll be some shuttle that moves people around the base.
Probably something like that. Yeah.
Yes, a lot like that. So I'm pretty sure they're going to, in fact, I think that might be the same brand. They're going to roll out something like that in the not so distant future. And I want to say there's a university. I don't know
Virginia
if it's Marymount or Virginia. There's some university campus in the vicinity of Northern Virginia that might also be, if it doesn't already have, I think it might have on the ground now, maybe it's Blacksburg, it'd be farther away, but on the ground now, like autonomous drones that are delivering food to students.
I think that's Virginia Tech.
Yeah. So it's not a vehicle holding people, but it is autonomous vehicle technology moving goods and services around the campus for students.
This is on the ground now, and it sounds like they want to operationalize it quite soon. And in Reston, I think, too, they're talking about within the year having this shuttle on a very quiet private development. So. Mm-hmm. It's in very limited cases and very controlled environments, or relatively controlled environments. It's sort of happening now-ish, but it's scale and in mixed traffic.
I like
think we're talking
the
further
word
out.
Now-ish.
Yeah.
Now-ish.
Got it. Yeah. Closer than I thought.
I mean, there's also, like, just to complicate it further, there's different levels of autonomy. So fully autonomous is level 5. And I think like some like Tesla cars are like level 2 right now, where you know you can kind of put it on cruise control, and then like on the highway, it is mostly autonomous. But then, then when you get into a city, you still have to drive or something like that. Like,
yep.
It was explained to me once. I forget the details. But.
And I feel like those different levels solve the safety problem, but not the game changer issue of not having a driver.
Yeah.
And in addition to different levels, there's just the the life cycle of vehicles. Mm-hmm. So it's much more likely, I think, that we're going to see fleets turnover, fleets of transit, mm-hmm. and fleets of freight, like trucking services, where they will invest in and turn over their fleet on some regular basis, particularly given how many miles that they put on their vehicles. And those will become autonomous first, to the higher extent of autonomy. Whereas community members keep their cars until they die. I mean, most, if you own a car and you don't have a lot of spare change, you're not going to give it up tomorrow for the latest autonomous vehicle. So you're going to have a long time while both person-driven vehicles and computer-driven vehicles are going to have to get along on the street before we can see. Like,
I know this is an interesting discussion, but could we? There's a lot more I see on these slides that, you know.
Thank you.
This will come up a lot more, I think. But the one thing I wanted to flag is just that the city itself has somewhat limited tools to address some of these issues. We'll be thinking about that, I guess, as we go through this plan. But there's only so much we could do now, but there are things that we should start thinking about potentially. So mobility as a service, this has been a hot topic in the transportation planning world a little bit over the last several years. Having a single app to be able to integrate different mobility options and pay for that mobility option, or a series of them in a variety of ways. Dash bus service is actually exploring advancing a payment app. There's different apps right now that do the show you how to make a trip with different options, but integrating it all in one thing is hasn't happened much yet. I think a lot of the complication is if you're planning a trip and you're taking transit and you're taking Lyft and you're taking a scooter, figuring out how to pay or having on the back end, figuring out how to pay seamlessly for all those services is something that is tricky. And people keep talking about wanting to do it, but it's I don't know if in the States I've seen many examples of that.
I mean, the closest example I've seen is Transit App.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of integration there. And what they do is incrementally increase capability of the app. So it shows all the scooters. Some of them you can connect directly to the app to rent the scooter when you click on it in the app. Mm-hmm. It also shows transit, and it shows like the different times and potentially pricing. And it's incremental change that we're seeing. And you would have to, every service has to buy in. And I would be fairly certain that WMATA's rail, it doesn't let you click on it in Transit App and buy your ticket to get on the rail system right now. But if it did, that app would be providing essentially close to that sort of optimized service.
Something else to consider with these apps, for example, is persons who have visual impairments rely on documents that are PDFs and not graphically rendered so that their readers can read them to them. Mm-hmm. It's a serious problem, like restaurants advertise their restaurants and they post GIFs and whatever in emails, JPEGs, and e-readers or whatever you want to call them for the visually impaired can't read those. They can read PDFs, they can read Word documents, they cannot read a JPEG, for example. So there are issues with that in terms of the accessibility to that for those who have visual impairment.
That's a good point. For all of these new mobility options in particular, is making sure that they're accessible for everyone. I might flip through a couple of these pretty quickly, but just Open Streets is a concept that came up in our 2008 plan. I don't think there's been a ton of example, or we closed down King Street for a couple things a year, maybe, but there might be more we could do there, and that's...
They're talking about that now, and I don't know what the timing of it, but they're talking about closing the 100, 200 block of King Street to expand dining and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so from individual events to permanent plazas. There's an example in Boston downtown where they actually, not a full street, but they closed down a huge portion. They started out as a pop-up event, and then they made it permanent. And this is my favorite example of things that are happening in the mobility world. This was from a project that I did up in Everett, Massachusetts, where we did a study to look at short, medium, and long-term transit solutions. We wanted to do a full bus rapid transit. There were some complications with, doing full bus rapid transit would take some time and engineering, but we just, the mayor wanted a bus lane, and we thought that would be an easy, or a low-hanging fruit solution in the scheme of things that we were looking at. So a couple weeks after I finished the study, got stakeholders together with the MBTA and the city, and we plotted a bus lane in the morning peak hour direction from 4 to 9 a.m. The Department of Public Works put down cones at 4 in the morning when they started work, and then took them out at 9, and we had a mile stretch of a bus lane that started out as a week pilot, and then they made it permanent using cones, and then they painted the bus lane and put up signage, and then it spread to Boston and Arlington and a bunch of other municipalities in the area. So you see pop-up bike lanes and parklets and all these other things, but I think this sort of concept of piloting something and seeing without doing a huge public process beforehand, this might not be something you can do in every location, but I think it's an interesting idea to think about beyond some of the more typical pop-up things that people see. So
I like that you integrated the bike component into that street because it's probably not used heavily by buses, but it's nice to have the priority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that was a big debate with our bus operations folks, whether that was a good
idea.
Did
you change anything with lights in the process, or was this just paint?
So actually, this was just paint, but because it was a bus-only lane, the city jerry-rigged cameras. So instead of having transit signal priority, which was complicated with the MBTA, if there was something in the bus lane, it would get priority. So it was just a simple camera that said yes or no. So they implemented that as well.
Well, and there's, I'm sure you're all aware, we had a presentation a couple of weeks ago this meeting about looking at revising bus routes, and they were looking at two models, one based on frequency of use, number of riders, versus coverage. And, that's going to become a real hot button issue in terms of what bus routes get taken away and what get added to and increased. And that's going to really affect mobility for a lot of different groups, from poor to disabled,
That's a good point. And so the transit piece actually of this mobility plan will really happen next year after the Alexander Transit Vision study is complete. So we'll be building off of their efforts. So just giving folks some food for thought right now. Pricing strategies has come up a lot. I'm just going to go through these. And then the Waze effect you hear a lot about with new technology. People are finding new ways to cut through neighborhoods, and apparently there's some folks who are trying to put in like accidents and slowdowns on their street to
That's
get
creative.
Folks to...
That is really creative.
But there's also speed bumps and other things that municipalities can do to help with those issues. People-centered metrics is something that we talked about before, and is actually something that came up in the 2008 plan. But thinking about measuring what matters with your streets, looking at person throughput, looking at pedestrian level of service or quality of service, VMT reduction when you analyze transportation impacts of development. This is something that's happening more and more. It's tricky finding a quantitative comparison for auto level of service. The pedestrian and bicycle levels of service just show part of the picture. There's movement towards quality of service that combines quantitative and qualitative measures.
I think it's just a bad starting point. Like, mm-hmm. the A to F scale for cars moving quickly through a space, it doesn't make sense to compare a pedestrian sidewalk.
Right.
That would be like running. If people are running through the space, like how quickly can they get, that would be the closest equation, but that's not how we say a sidewalk is successful in supporting people.
Yeah, so just another piece of the puzzle. Equity, and looking at equity impacts of transportation, it's a topic that didn't really come up much in the 2008 plan and is a much hotter topic since that point. Looking at the intersection of health and transportation is one area, looking at health impact assessments, and just, it's not just safety, it's asthma rates, it's access to opportunity, access to healthcare, all of these things are related to transportation, and then in conjunction with that, the costs.
Does anyone remember, I feel like I put it on my calendar, but it's not at the top of my mind right now, when the presentation of the final results of the community health assessment?
June 6th. I thought it was a Saturday.
6th is not a Saturday.
Yeah, June 6th is during the week.
It's a Thursday. Yeah, it's a
Thursday. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I just think that would be maybe a thing that if you could ping us all with that meeting to make sure people know when it's happening, because if they can go, it's good background information. It's about Alexandria. It's a completion of an assessment that's already gone on. And it might feed into that aspect of our discussions. I know there has been throughout the process transportation folks represented, the bicycle advisory or
bicycle and pedestrian advisory
committee.
BPAC,
yeah, has been there. Transportation commissioners have been there. So there's been, those voices have been at the table.
I definitely agree. I think it'd be good to listen to. One thing to think about is that I think is a community health assessment, which is slightly different than a health impact assessment. And so there may be gaps or different tools we could think about how to incorporate.
So quickly, and I think this is something where you guys can email me or reach out if any of these topics you think are really important that we dig into deeper, if there's things that you know about that you, the case studies that you think we should look into, other trends or topics. This is really just some initial things that have been in our minds as we've been working or advancing this plan, but this is really just the beginning and trying to get you guys to think creatively about directions that we should be going in. So maybe I'll circle back to that.
June 26th.
So yeah, we can get into that discussion. But I do want to talk, now that more of you are here, about these meetings and timing. If we want to reconsider 6 o'clock before the Transportation Commission meeting.
Yeah, based on the ease of arrival.
Yeah, I think I'll... probably send out a doodle poll, but for a 7 o'clock on another night of the week, probably would make more sense.
I liked the idea of the efficiency of
me
it,
too.
But scrambling out of the house, and then I was like, and what am I going to have for dinner? And my husband's like, doesn't Planning Commission feed you? And I'm like, it's not Planning Commission. And it's not like
they feed you?
Only when you have a work session right before the commission hearing. And this is technically the same thing, but we don't get that benefit.
Yeah, I
get off of work at around 5 or near 5 o'clock. I work out on Eisenhower Avenue. I live near Arlandria. I have to get home to walk my dog. I mean, let's not even talk about dinner. I can bring something with me, but there's almost no way I'm going to get from the Arlandria area into Old Town with the traffic at that time of night to be there by 6 o'clock if I'm not leaving work till 4:35 o'clock.
Sure. I think two things I was just mentioning. When you send something out, if it works for people, I think it'd be great if we could find like another standing date so we know it's like the third Thursday of the month or something like that. The other thing is I've never seen us have a phone before. So if that is an option that we're able to do and we have a standing time, if we can get a call-in number, even if people are in transition, just to be able to get more voices like participating, maybe that's something we could start sending out with the meeting as well once we get a new time.
Yeah. No, one thing, I mean, One thing we actually kind of try to avoid is too much of people calling in, because that reduces a lot of the kind of face-to-face contact and discussion. So, I mean, you know, as an exceptional basis, that's probably
I totally understand and agree. I would much rather be there in person. However, it was about 5 o'clock when I got home, and I got to give my dog at least 10 minutes so he can poop. And I need to get back in the car, and it's going to take me at a minimum a half hour to fight through traffic to get to Old Town by 6 o'clock.
Right.
That's West Downtown. It's hard enough to get there for a 7 o'clock meeting. I just barely make it when I leave the house at 6:30. It's impossible. Now, if somebody would like to pay the $15 that it would cost me for a dog walker, I would come straight from the office.
Yeah.
I think it's a great idea. New standing date, time, 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And my suggestion is maybe we might be able to do this with a doodle poll or something, but maybe another Wednesday, because then we know it just lines up with the fact that many of us are transportation commissioners. We already do a Wednesday, so one of the other Wednesdays in the month. Mm-hmm. It doesn't conflict with planning commission.
Okay. My commission meets on the second Wednesday of the month.
Okay.
Well, so I think Jen will circulate some ideas. We can go from there. And if people have ideas before the next meeting of what those dates could be, or so we don't get the other conflicts, then I think that would be really helpful.
Great. I want to give commissioners a couple minutes to stretch your legs before the next meeting. But if you have any quick last thoughts, but I think I can engage with all of you afterwards too to get thoughts on different areas of focus or other ideas you have.
I just want to say that I'm really excited to start this process. I'm really excited that Aaliyah is going to help manage the meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to encourage us, I know that staff is going to work really hard to structure us and keep us within scope, and that the scope, one of the earliest slides you had talked about how this is a strategic update, and those are code words for don't change anything more than you have to, because we don't have unlimited funds, at least that's how I read them. But that said, you also outlined a lot of reasons why we have to rethink a lot of things that probably appear in the existing plan. And so I just want to encourage everyone to think as outside the box as we can at this point, because early on is where we can prioritize our time, we can prioritize staff's time on what other research has to happen behind the scenes to help answer our questions. And if we know we want to go in a particular direction with one of those chapters or with how we structure it, it's better for us to really flesh out those directions now, early, and rather than having arguments about whether we've headed the right direction 5 months from now.
Two thoughts. One, I noticed when you were going through the trends, we didn't talk anything about Vision Zero, Complete Streets, and I think some of that is because the city already has robust plans in those areas. But I do wonder, to your point about, we've done a lot, but are there things we miss or areas we can revisit? I think just keeping those things at the forefront as well will be important as we go through this. And then when you talked about metrics, this will probably come out more once we do the visioning, but if we get to the point where we're talking about, as part of the vision, it's sustainability, it's health, it's equity, whatever the words are that we decide, what are the metrics within those particular areas, and how do they relate to transportation? I think that would be just something interesting for us to track as well.
I think my comment would be that certainly what I've seen online in various places is there's a cohort that is not necessarily pleased with the direction the city is going with some of their master plans. So I think we need to be sure that we're accommodating the public input early enough that when we start to coalesce around a plan, that we ensure their participation in that process, and that we're not so far off track from what some people want versus what others want. But we found kind of the middle ground for them.
Okay, well, I think we're at time, but I really appreciate, this is really great feedback. I think we're filling the groundwork to hit the ground running moving forward. And appreciate all of your time. Thank you. Thanks, Debbie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. I will meet you all.
Come on in. How are you?
You're the girl.
Yeah.
I like that.
Respond.
I think we're looking at, like, I'm busy. Or, I'm tired.
Improvement. You know what? Did you get up this morning?
Check.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm going to do the lights went on. I slept in bed last night. I was able to take a warm shower. I made it to work without dodging sniper rounds.
Wow. Wow.
Bonus.
Yeah. It gets better from there.
Yeah. And we have a light agenda, so.
Well, that's an added bonus.
The ones from the last meeting are up already, and then these will be posted. And we don't have any from the first. I don't think we have any from the first.
So either. Yeah, I just was thinking that would be a good thing for me, at least, because I missed it.
Yes. No, we're going to, now that Jen's here, we're getting.
Yeah, no, it was like a good presentation.
Okay. This is hard to get, yeah.
Yeah, the goal's there to make it.
Does anyone need to take a break before we begin the meeting? Leg stretch or restroom break or what have you?
As you wish, Mr. Chair.
It's whatever.